Good morning and happy NBA Christmas Eve, or NBA Christmas, I guess, now that it's actually, free agency has actually started. We weren't necessarily planning on recording tonight, but there's already been a flurry of deals and news. So Danny LaRue joining me to break it all down. What's up, Danny?
I'm excited that it happened this quickly. I was expecting to go to sleep and then wake up and have a bunch of stuff, but instead we have it now.
I just want to let you know, by the way, all followers, that I have every intention of signing with the San Antonio Spurs, but there are details in the contract which still need to be worked out with the organization. So, whether it's going to be signed in a black or blue pen is really important. So we haven't actually agreed to anything yet, just in case you're wondering, my cap hold is still really low.
Yeah, it's a really smart move. It's not surprising. It was pretty much what had to happen. But
why? I don't think it's a good move to spend money on me. But you know that.
Hey, you and I.
Oh, Kawhi Leonard is who you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. So So the basic reason that they have to do that is because if they have agreed to a deal, even a verbal agreement counts, and so then that would replace his number.
Yeah, and as we talked about on the Spurs podcast, I mean. We're putting the cart before the horse here. Kawhi Leonard reportedly, according to Woj, has agreed to, quote-unquote, the framework of a maximum extension, 5 years, $90 million. And the reason it's framework, as Danny was saying, is because his cap hold is low. And at $7 million, he'll start at maybe even a little bit over $16 million now with the new cap estimate reported by Ken Berg. It's going to be a little higher than people thought. So that $9 million difference is a big part of what they're using to sign LaMarcus Aldridge, hopefully. And that extra million or two of wiggle room is also going to be real helpful. You want to explain to everyone what that report is from Ken Berg?
So the report is that I think the main reason why is because the players didn't get enough money. And so the expectation is that they have an estimate for the cap. And part of why the moratorium exists is that they have to figure out what the actual numbers are. And so what he reported is that the actual numbers could end up being as much as about $2 million higher than what the estimates were, which could have a substantial effect on all of this, because there are a couple teams, the Spurs being one of them, that this changes their calculus a little bit just in terms of how much they might have to squeeze to get everything. Another team is the Lakers.
Yeah, and so it was presumed to be $67.1 million. The estimate, as it often has in past years, but not last year, ends up being higher. The league, I think, usually tries to be pretty conservative in these estimates so that it doesn't end up lower than people expect and therefore kind of mess up people's planning. You know, it's better to be conservative with the estimates. But Berg's report is the cap could be as high as $68 million, maybe even getting into $69 million, and that'll help out teams like the Spurs a lot, as we said. So, I mean, the interesting thing here, you know, clearly this whole thing had been worked out beforehand. It probably, frankly, was worked out as early as October when I wrote a piece saying they're not going to give him the maximum extension now because of this cap hold reason, because of the uncertainty with Manu and Tim Duncan, who are now presumed basically to be coming back. Duncan apparently is going to be part of the meeting with Aldridge, so he'd probably be doing that if he's going to be coming back. So that was the interesting thing here. I mean, I thought that if I were Kawhi's agent, I might have at least pushed for a player option on the last year. We'll see whether that ends up happening or not. We'll see whether, you know, I mean, I might have even wanted 4 years or even possibly 3 years, because you have much more leverage as a restricted free agent now with them, because you can sign an offer sheet somewhere else and torpedo their chances of getting Aldridge. But, you know, the Spurs have really bamboozled. Well, I shouldn't say bamboozled. They've convinced their players to really be team players, even in a free agency sense. This is the latest example of that. Duncan taking less, Manu taking less could be another example of that. And when you have that kind of a culture, what an advantage it is. And without that sort of selflessness on the part of their players, they're not even in the conversation for Aldridge.
And as the person who was on the other end of it, our negotiation in the mock-off season seems like it was much more arduous than it was for Kawhi and the Spurs.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I was being a little more aggressive as the player agent, but you know, he's happy to be there. I mean, and you know, $90 million is still plenty of money. So that's not a surprise, but, you know, they're, I'm sure that'll be officially agreed to once they conclude their other free agent business. Let's move on to the other big news of the day. I got a lot of questions about this on Twitter. Anthony Davis signing the maximum possible extension that he can right now. Reports have projected that at around 5 years and $143 million, which I'm sure just made everybody's eyes bug out, especially when you consider that guys like Jimmy Butler and Kawhi Leonard, who are getting the max, even someone like Aldridge, the max he could get would be 5 years and $108 million, even if he re-signed with Portland. So why, Danny, is it so much higher for Anthony Davis? He's signing right at the same time as the rest of these guys are.
Because his contract starts in the year that the cap actually explodes. And so the way that one of the great things to understand with the CBA is that we talk about max raises, is that that's all built on the first year of salary. And so the percentage, if you're signing with your own team, the highest is 7.5%. If you're signing with someone else, it's 4.5%. And that's the same thing goes for declines. And that might come up in a little bit. And so that all depends on the first year salary. So he can get a higher max based on the cap estimates for 2016. And there's an additional factor with him, which is the possibility, which is not a definite thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that right now, of him qualifying for what is commonly called the Rose Rule.
Yeah, and the key thing to remember is he is signing an extension, an extension of his rookie deal. He's only completed 3 of the 4 years of his rookie deal. He's eligible for an extension. They are signing him to it wisely at the earliest moment they possibly could. But it doesn't actually kick in until next year. And so it's normalized to be a percentage of next year's cap, which is going to be $90 million or so instead of the $68, $69 million it's going to be. So that's why it's so much higher. And the other aspect is, as you mentioned, the Rose Rule. There's a criteria that you have to meet in order to get a higher max if you coming off of your rookie contract. And the criteria is you have to be named an all-star starter twice, and Davis was that last year, or you have to be named to an all-NBA team twice, or you have to be named NBA MVP once. If you do one of those three things, then you are eligible for a 30% of the salary cap, whereas most guys, any other guys really with 0 to 6 years of experience are only eligible for the 25% of the salary cap max. So that bumps Davis up to start around $25 million or so, next year, assuming that he either is voted in as an all-star starter next year or makes an all-NBA team. Pretty good bet to do either of those things.
One small thing. Actually, there would be a very interesting argument on this because Davis, as I understand it, was he voted in as a starter or was he a replacement? I think that the argument would be made theoretically if that were all he did, that
he was voted in.
Was he? Okay, if he was, then I withdraw it. I thought my memory was
that. Yeah, remember the thing about how like the NBA has some weird all-encompassing stat that doesn't really mean anything, but that because he was the leader in that stat, he showed up on the first page of the online All-Star balloting. And that was posited by some as part of the reason he got so many votes. But yeah, he was definitely voted in to start the All-Star game, as I remember it. One of us can look that up while the other one drones on. But anyway, that's enough on Davis. Big score for the Pelicans. The other thing that Mark Stein reported was that he will have a fifth-year player option on that deal as well. This is basically the best possible deal that the Pelicans could have offered him in every possible respect, really. Maybe he might have wanted only 4 years, but I think, you know, when you're that young, you just lock into the 5 years, especially if you get the fifth year early termination option. So he is now in the fold, until
2020.
Yeah, for sure.
And you were right. Davis was. He was actually the leading front court vote getter in the Western Conference. So I was wrong. I apologize for any misconceptions that were out there for about 30 seconds.
That's right. I never make mistakes, but everyone else does. One mistake we did make, by the way, that we should clear up from yesterday. We didn't mention Sergio Yule for the Rockets as a potential option with their mid-level exception. And I think that very likely will take that, according to a lot of the reports out there. I think they're still negotiating, but I think he's probably better than anyone else that they could get with that mid-level unless someone takes a discount. All right, we're being too disjointed here. Let's move on to the first player changing teams, Al-Farouq Aminu, 4 years, $30 million to Portland, as reported by Woj.
It's also, for me, it was the initial sticker shock move because Davis and Kawhi, you know, we've been working on their numbers for such a long time. That doesn't mean it was a bad move necessarily. It just was surprising in that sense, especially considering he was playing for the minimum in Dallas last year.
Yeah, I thought he was underpaid at that last year. To me, Aminu, he actually found a ton of success in the playoffs, working as basically a backup center almost, or a backup four-man when they're playing against the Rockets. And I think playing at the four is really what maximizes him the most. He's just not a good enough offensive player to play the three. But at the four, you know, he can hold up from a rebounding standpoint there. I mean, I think he's someone who can be a good backup big, can defend out on the floor threes pretty well, can defend most fours, especially in a backup role, but his biggest weakness is that he's not quite strong enough really to be a full-time four. He hasn't added any weight at all really since he came out of college, at least to my eyes. And, you know, that if he were able to get stronger, then he might even be like a low-cost kind of starter option. But what do you think of this deal? I think it's not bad at all.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad. The length is a little bit surprising to me, 4 years as well. But as we've said, almost everybody who signed for that long, it's going to look a lot better in time. After the first year, and we've talked about it with LaMarcus probably leaving, the first year, the Blazers are going to have money to burn. After that, depending on how the cap rises, it works out to what will be similar to the present equivalent of a mid-level exception deal. And at that price, he's worth it. He's a nice guy to have. One of the things we've talked about previously that I really like is somebody who works coming off the bench, and maybe you can start them in a pinch. And I think Aminu is that. Also, when you think about the pieces that Portland has, especially adding Mason Plumlee, it's nice to have a guy who his calling card is defense. I think of him more as a man-to-man defender than really like a rim protector or anything like that. But he's a good piece to have. It's surprising
He can switch pick and rolls if he's playing the four.
Yeah, and it's nice to have. It's weird to sign a guy like that this early, but the amount I have no problem with.
A couple of thoughts on that. I think that signing him this early, we saw some teams like last year, the Raptors kind of got some of their guys, I think, at a cheaper price than you might have expected by moving early. You'll remember the whole market was paralyzed by waiting for LeBron and Carmelo to do what they're going to do. And so I think Masai Ujiri re-signing Lowry, re-signing Patrick Patterson, decided that, you know, we're going to act now. These, you know, give guys something certain. And I think, you know, that certainty is kind of worth it to some guys more than having to wait it out. I mean, Aminu, someone like him could have gone for more, frankly. You never know. I mean, we're going to see how this market is. You know, the Blazers had a ton of space in our mock off season. We didn't even get down to the level of guys like Aminu, but this is not shocking me. The other thing too is in this free agency period where you're going to try to lock guys up long term with the cap rising, what you want to do is get guys who could conceivably continue to improve and then be a real bargain right as they're getting into their prime. Aminu is 24. So if he's making, you know, $7.5 million 3-4 years from now, then right when he's in his prime, that's when you can really recoup for a deal like this. And that's really kind of more what you're paying for than this year. And that's the thing to always remember is with all these deals, how does this deal look in 2017? How does this deal look in 2018? With these long-term deals and getting someone young, you don't expect that they're performance will decline in concert with their contract as a percentage of the salary cap. You want their performance to increase at the same time their percentage of the cap is decreasing. Those are the deals that are going to be big steals in this environment.
Yeah, and the Blazers, I sincerely hope for their sake that they're trying to push to have his contract descend, because it's not a huge difference at the 4.5%, but that would be nice for them, because that they're not going to use all their cap space this year, so they can do that. You know, that's a marginal benefit of about $1 million down the line, but that's nice to have.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe they will. I mean, they could try to get some other guys kind of right in that range. You know, I mean, someone like a Jay Crowder, that sort of guy. You know, we talked about him as a potential for them when we previewed their offseason.
The other guy, I talked about this a little bit on Twitter, that is going to be affected by this, and I didn't mean it as a dig on Aminu, but Damari Carroll, like, people who thought that he wasn't going to get a ton of money, like, he, to me, is a substantial upgrade on Al-Farouq Aminu, and...
Four years older, but
in terms of, he's a clear-cut, unquestionable starter in the league right now, at least based on his performance last year. And so that is a little bit perilous for the Hawks, just because, as we talked about both in the mock offseason and when we've talked about them, that because of his early bird rights, the value is so low, they're basically going to have to use cap space to get him back.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if I were an organization, I would be pretty willing to just max out Carroll for 3 years. I might even consider doing something like that. You know, with the key being it's 3 years instead of 4 years, you know, because I think you can count on getting pretty good performance from him for 3 years. That fourth year starts to get a little dicey as he's around 32. But anyway, all right, we are digressing a little bit here. Why don't we move on to a little bit more Woj in that same piece about Kawhi reported that the Spurs are the front runners for Aldridge. He met with the Lakers. It went well. I don't know why I'm even bothering to relay that, because it means nothing. Every free agent meeting ever has gone well. The Lakers meeting with Dwight Howard went well, according to reports at the time. Another interesting tidbit was Wes Matthews also meeting with the Mavericks along with DeAndre Jordan, and Matthews reportedly looking for a $15 million a year deal, not quite understanding what the number of years is on that, but I'm kind of assuming it might be as much as 4 years. Tim McMahon out of Dallas, ESPN Dallas, reporting that the Mavericks are looking more to give him something like $12 million a year, but that already will show you, I mean, that number of years isn't reported either. But, I mean, the fact that people are going to pay Wes Matthews $12 million a year coming off the Achilles injury, not even certain if he'll be ready to start the year, that, again, another indication of what this market's going to be like.
And you talk about the idea that he's not going to be ready. There's also a rough track record of guys with Achilles injuries even getting back to 100% of what they once were.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's never a guy who is, like, a big – I mean, you can always spin it both ways with these guys, right? Like, he was never an amazing athlete, but so you say, oh, he's not dependent on athleticism, so, you know, the torn Achilles won't hurt him. All right, you could spin it that way. You could also spin it as he doesn't have that much athleticism, and if he loses even a little bit, then he's really, you know, he's losing his margin for error. So I tend towards the latter approach, frankly. I mean, I think the guys who are the most athletic can still kind of, you know, have more margin for error when they suffer a big injury like that, but I mean, I think Wes was always kind of a little overrated as a stopper, like not a real lockdown guy, you know, a good defender. So, I mean, I would expect to see most of the decline on defense. And then, you know, and then I think he's still going to be able to shoot the ball just fine. So, but I mean, I think the Mavericks, if they get him, they're going to be counting on him to be a stopper on the wing. He'll be their best stopper on the wing. He's the kind of guy that you kind of want more as like your second guy on the wing if you really have your druthers. But, you know, there's not a lot of those 3-and-D guys to go around.
Yeah, and we should also talk about, yeah, DeAndre Jordan's the other guy. And if you think about it, if they could get both of those guys, and I'm not saying they are, I'm not saying anything like that, you can kind of see how that, how those, even that four with Chandler Parsons and Dirk, how that fits together in terms of strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, McMahon also had a nice piece. He's been killing it, by the way, to McMahon, with all this Dallas reporting on what the Mavs' vision was that they're trying to sell DeAndre Jordan on. And, you know, it was poo-pooed that he wants to be more of an offensive focus. Like, oh, he doesn't have a post game, he can't do anything. I think even he understands he doesn't need to post up all the time, but McMahon says they're trying to sell him on basically being the main guy in pick and roll because, you know, except when Blake Griffin was injured, DeAndre Jordan was basically just in the dunker role. They'd run the pick and roll with Blake, and then maybe Blake would alley-oop it to him. But now, you know, they're going to have Dirk kind of spotting up on the weak side, and so the idea will be to just get DeAndre a lot more alley-oops, have him be the primary guy setting the screen in pick and roll instead of like in Los Angeles with Blake, and that he'll get a lot more scoring opportunities that way because he's probably the best alley-oop dunker in the game.
Yeah, I would say so. Do you want to move on to the other news?
Yes.
So I guess I'll take it. Again, Woj is reporting that there are basically deals done with Brooklyn with both of their prominent unrestricted free agents, and that would be Brook Lopez and Thaddeus Young. I believe the numbers that he threw out were 3 years, $60 million for Brook, and 4 years, $50 million for Thaddeus.
Yeah, and do you feel like Brook Lopez could have done a little better than that?
I definitely do. I'm hoping.
Yeah, because you're the one who gave, as the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, you're the one who gave him a 4 year max, right?
I think the last year was a team option, if I remember correctly. But anyway, I have a piece that's coming out probably for the Sporting News by the time most of the people read this, and the concept of it is that these Nets guys are in an unusual circumstance, and a lot of teams are in this because you can think about it in terms of their fit with this team, but the way I like to think about these guys is on July 1st, 2016, will they be assets that they can trade in case Brooklyn, and I'm not saying they will, but if they get one of those true max guys. And I think that these contracts a year from now, especially with the new cap, will look really good. And even if you think of Brook's player option, in some ways that's a negative for, it is a negative for a team because you assume the player is going to make a smart move. But if you want to think about Brook Lopez as a $20 million expiring at that point, that's going to look nice too.
Well, why would he? It's 3 years, so he wouldn't be an expiring yet.
But if you're looking in 2016, so a year from now, and then so at that point it's 2 years and $40 million.
Yeah, no, so, I agree with you. I think that's a good contract, which is part of why. I mean, you know, Brooke has these health issues. Obviously, reportedly, he is like pretty averse to change. He's liked being with the Nets. That's where he's been his whole career. Although he did sign that offer sheet with the then Bobcats, the last time he was a free agent 3 years ago. But yeah, I mean, I think he might be able to get a little more on the years front, but maybe that just wasn't possible with the injuries. And supposedly there are some protections for Brooklyn as well in case he re-injures his foot. But I mean, with Brooklyn having just no other way to replace him and no draft pick next year and they would have just been awful if they lost him. You know, maybe he could have gotten a little more out of that. But, you know, so good. Actually, probably the first long-term contract you could point to that the Nets signed, and Young, too, even, that are actually, you know, pretty decent deals. I mean, Young is maybe a little bit below average starting power forward, $12 million a year, is 27 through, you know, end of his prime. Totally fine.
Totally fine. Yeah, and as you brought up, you know.
He's refined his three-point shot the last couple of years. I think that can continue to be a weapon for him also.
And the Nets were in an all-time corner because not only did they have these two guys who had this, they had no way to replace them at all. And so, and they don't have their own draft pick, so there's no silver lining here. There was nothing there. So not only did they get guys that they had to have, but they have them at contracts that not only is it workable for them, but if they get a Kevin Durant or a Dwight Howard interested in them next year, I don't think they would have any trouble whatsoever moving them.
All right, as we're talking about some of these future issues, there have been reports the current league estimate is $108 million cap for 2017, and that's been kind of driving a lot of the discussion on this as well, another basically $18 million jump. But the thing to remember there is that's the current estimate under the current system. And a big reason why that's going to happen is because the projection is that with the cap jumping up so much, the players just aren't going to get their full percentage of the revenue in 2016 when the cap goes up to $90 million. Because usually, under most circumstances, most teams are way over the cap. With the cap going up to $90 million, you're going to have teams that are just spending up to the cap. And therefore, and the cap is only, you know, 44.74% of BRI. And the players are supposed to get 50 to 51% or 49 to 51% of BRI. So if every team is only spending to the cap, then there's probably going to be likely a shortfall of what the players are supposed to be getting. And the mechanism is when the players are getting that, are not getting enough, is that the cap then goes up higher the next year to make up for the fact that the players weren't getting enough. This year probably is another example. That's part of why the cap's going to go up so much next year, is because you have so many teams with cap room this year. So with that being the case, that's a that kind of artificial increase that's not necessarily tied to the revenue, but more the player's percentage, is why it goes up to 108. Whether that stays the case after the new collective bargaining agreement comes in, you know, when at least one side or the other opts out in 2017, that remains to be seen. You know, a cap analyst that I really respect a lot, Albert Namad, Albert Random One on Twitter, we've mentioned him before on this podcast. He believes that that's going to get negotiated away, most likely. I am not sure about that. I'm a little bit less confident of that than he is, but frankly, he knows more than I do on this issue. Other people have kind of been quoting that number like it's gospel, but I don't think that they're really getting into the mechanics of it that well. But that's how those numbers are calculated in a very kind of 10,000 foot manner. So that 108 million, that's really more than what it kind of should be just based on the revenue of the league. And that could very easily get adjusted, but there are a lot of other factors too. The players could get more of a percentage, from the next agreement. Although, you know, they never seem to get the owners.
They
so
never do.
I'm sure about that.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention with that is that it will be the new CBA. And while we don't know what that'll be, the other piece of news since we're recording this, and I'm the one who's on Twitter, is that Mark Steiner's reporting that Milwaukee and Chris Middleton are closing in on a 5-year, $70 million deal, which is less than the max.
That's a steal.
Absolute, unquestionable
Complete
steal.
He should have gotten the max. You know, he just shot well over 40% on three-pointers. One of the best defenders in the league on the wing by advanced metrics. Probably not quite that good on an individual level. He kind of got lit up by Jimmy Butler a little bit against the Bulls, but still, you know, only 23 years old, I think. Like, that is a steal for Milwaukee. Now, and of course, that's another one of these ones where they'll agree on the framework and then they'll actually wait to get him signed because his cap hold is so small they'll want to sign other guys up to the cap and then exceed the cap to re-sign him. That's what happens with a lot of these kind of later drafted restricted free agents who, end up getting a big raise.
That is so huge for them because that's a full, like, $3 million less this year.
He never gets hurt either, by the way.
Yeah, and we don't know for sure, but Jared Dudley, he kept his deal, right?
Yeah, Jared Dudley has opted in.
Which is huge, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm surprised that he did that, frankly. Unless there was some sort of a wink-wink there. I mean, I think he, for this year even, he could have exceeded that $4.6 million. So that's a little surprising. I mean, he liked it in Milwaukee, I guess.
Yeah, everything's coming up bucks.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they're still going to have some cap room as well. You know, they're going to be going after their center. I just hope Jabari comes back. Okay, that could be a heck of a team. They may need to get a little more shooting at point guard, but
I wish they hadn't traded for Michael Carter Williams, but we can save that for another time.
Well, I mean, they would have had to pay a lot for Knight. Probably would have had to overpay. So yeah, I mean, but anyway, I think that's a steal. If I were the Bucks, if you forced me to, I would have gone full max 5 years for Chris Middleton in a second. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, so mark my words, that I think is very likely to be a fantastic contract 2 years from now, 3 years from now. You know, he'll be a free agent again when he's 28, like getting that length to locking up all the way through 28, fantastic.
And now, and the other thing is they're young assets are cost controlled. That Giannis has a couple more years. Jabari has 3 more years on the rookie deal. So you're going to have a window where you're paying key players basically nothing.
Oh, they're going to have massive cap room again next year too.
Right.
I mean, they'll be able to get right back into it again next year and add another piece, maybe, you know, a point guard or something like that, that could really some more shooting in the backcourt, you know, sort of like a heat up off the bench gunner type they could use as well. So yeah, I mean, it's looking pretty good for the Bucks. And I think what we're seeing here is the teams that are moving early on guys are going to end up being rewarded because we're going to see that I think that these deals, you're going to look back at what some inferior players and Chris Middleton end up getting, and you're going to say, wow, that was pretty good for the Bucks. Now, granted, they did have some leverage. He was a restricted free agent, but he had some leverage on them too. He could have tried to go out on the market and messed up their free agency plans by getting an offer, and then they would have had 3 days to match and basically 3 days to use their cap space. So now they get to preserve that cap space. He'll presumably sign after they do all the rest of their business. And really just a huge win for the Bucks. I would have thought Middleton could have done a little better. I think a team like the Jazz, you know, why wouldn't they max him out? You know, like that would be perfect for them. And just, yeah, a head scratcher to me that's going to be that low. We'll see if that actually happens.
And the one thing I'll add to that is that you think about the difference between being maxed by another team and not by your own team is the fifth year. But the fifth year, if you're Chris Middleton, is probably not a benefit because he could be getting paid more as a free agent that year.
Yeah, we'll see. And a lot of times you'll find out that there are player options or team options on these. I mean, probably we'll see a lot more player options in this market because just the players have so much more leverage. But yeah, that's pretty remarkable. Another thing I think we'll see a lot of too, ultimately, I mean, it's not going to be reported, I guess, but once we really get into it, and one thing you guys should always look at, by the way, who updates the fastest, Eric Pincus, his salary pages at my former employer, Basketball Insiders, fantastic work. He definitely updates really quickly, lots of detail. Like those are the pages to go to get. He's updating it basically every night during free agency. So go there if you need like the latest cap situation for your favorite team. But one of the things I think we'll start seeing on these deals once he really gets into the nitty gritty and reports the details is I think a lot of these deals are going to have trade kickers. And the reason for that is even max deals, trade kickers didn't matter because there were max deals and the salary cap wasn't really going up that much faster. But now people who sign max deals, there's going to be a ton of space above them for what the max salary is at that time when they are to get traded later. So having a 15% trade kicker will be big for someone like, say, LaMarcus Aldridge. If he ever gets traded, he signed for the max, but his individual max is going to be, you know, $29 million or something in the coming years. There'll be plenty of room on top of what he's making for that 15% trade kicker to kick in. And what's more, all of these agents and the players are going to have the leverage because they know that teams really want to sign them right now to lock them in under this lower cap. And because so many teams also have cap room this year. So look out for those. If I were a GM, that's how I'd be trying to sweeten the deal. I might even be offering, you know, signing bonuses, which you can do for up to 15% of a player's salary right away. I might even be offering early payments as well. Not only signing bonuses, but every year you're allowed to offer 25% of someone's salary beginning on July 1st. And then you can offer another 25% beginning on October 1st. So you can do 50% of their whole salary before the season starts. That's another thing that a GM of a team that has deeper pockets and wants to differentiate themselves just a little bit from some of the other suitors, that's what you could be doing as well. I mean, in what is a buyer's market right now, those are the little things that you might do if you're a GM to kind of separate yourself from the pack if the money is close.
Yeah, it's a huge point and a very important one. And we'll also, we'll see how that works with the Nets guys, because I would also think about that in terms of what I talked about, the idea of players being potentially trade assets, or if, like, thinking about them that way when you sign them to your contract. And a couple of those guys will be really, really in that market. Thaddeus Young, to me, is a great example of that. You know, if he can pull something in that range, though he doesn't have to worry about hitting the max like a guy like Brook Lopez would, it still would really help him out.
All right, let's roll through some of these rumors more quickly. Goran Dragic, Ethan Skolnick out of Miami from Bleacher Report. He's been kind of the most tied in guy on this Dwayne Wade situation. He's reported that Goran Dragic hasn't really been meeting with anyone else. There's sort of an assumption that he's going to be re-signing. We'll see if those deals actually, you know, that deal actually gets hammered out. You know, maybe we might reach a point at which you hear some vague rumblings about him going elsewhere. But if he's not having meetings right away, you have to assume he's probably going back. It's just a question of the number on a very likely a 5-year deal. Marc Gasol has not agreed to anything yet, but the Grizzlies are meeting with him in Spain. He doesn't have any other meetings set. Just a question of whether he goes for the 5-year deal or, as I suggested, might do like a 1+1 type of thing. The reporting has seemed to indicate it's going to be more like a 5-year deal with him being 30 years old, that he maybe wants to just lock that in for another $109 million, maybe even a little more than that with this new cap estimate. So that's not a ton of thought that those guys might change. How about some of these other ones, Danny?
I thought it was really interesting that Danny Green, I think the first call that he got was from Detroit. I'm a huge fan of him in Detroit. I think that the Spurs are a great fit, but I think he would work very well with Stan Van Gundy. I'm a Danny Green fan.
Can I say something? Green?
Yes, of course.
That's really big to me because that would, if he's not doing the Kawhi Leonard special, hey, let's work something out now, use my low cap hold, and then I'll come back to the Spurs. I think that they had the ability potentially with his low cap hold, only around $7 million for him as well, to bring him back. If he's taking other meetings, I think that means that he's not necessarily a priority for them. You know, not precluding the chance of him coming back. But if I'm them, I would have said, hey, we'll give you a massive deal. You got to just wait again while you have the small cap hold. But, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't feel like they value him in San Antonio quite the way the rest of the league does. I mean, we talked in some of our earliest podcasts, we talked about how, you know, that game against New Orleans at the end of the season and then some of those Clippers games, he, like, you know, barely played. He played like 9 minutes in the second half in that New Orleans game or something. Like, you know, I feel like Pop and the Spurs don't necessarily value him the way the rest of the league does. So it'll be interesting to see if he does go elsewhere, who ends up being proven right. But the way he shoots by, I think he's like, you know, a top 15 3-point shooter by percentage all time in NBA history. Good volume.
And he's a very good defender.
Yeah. This is an interesting question. Let's say Green leaves and they move on from either Tiago Splitter or Boris Dia and they pick up Aldridge. Everyone else comes back. Are they better or worse next year?
I don't think they're markedly better. I mean, you hope that maybe if Tony Parker had some sort of injury issue that would be better, but I don't think they're, if they are, I don't think they'd be better. And even if they were, I don't think it would be much.
Yeah. I mean, Kawhi will probably be better. Duncan has to fall off a cliff sometime. Maybe he doesn't, but you know, he's, it's hard to imagine him continue. You got to have at least a little decline from him. Manu looked like he might be kind of getting towards the end, in that Clippers series. And, yeah, I mean, so who are they going to start at the two now? You know, is it going to be Manu? He can only play 20, 25 minutes. They'll use the room exception on him most likely. So who's their starting two without Green? And the other reason Green, I think, is so important for them is if you think about if they have to play the Warriors in the playoffs, one of the reasons that I felt they matched up so well with them was because they had Kawhi, who they probably would have put on Klay Thompson, and he would have likely just completely erased Klay Thompson. And then they had Green to guard Curry. And now who's going to guard, you know, one of Clay or Curry is probably going to have, you know, an average at best defender on him. And I think they're going to really struggle to defend Golden State. You put Kawhi and Curry, Clay can get off. And, who's going to guard Curry? Tony Parker is going to be a massive defensive liability. He'll have to hide somewhere. He can't guard Steph Curry. So, yeah, I wonder, you know. I mean, they haven't really had trouble scoring that much. Aldridge is a great player. He helps, but I think what was really appealing was they retained Green and they retained Aldridge, and I'm surprised that they haven't been that aggressive to just lock him up early. You know, in the mock offseason pod, we had like a 5-year deal starting at $12 million for Green. And yeah, maybe that's an overpay towards the end. It probably almost certainly is. But just to get him on the team for these first couple of years with Aldridge, and then you got like a real super team. I don't know, man. It's, I would not be so happy about letting him go that easily.
Yeah, we're definitely on the same page there. Do you want to, there are a couple Lakers things, not huge, that have happened on Twitter during it. You want me to rattle those off and then we can talk about the other Lakers thing?
Oh yeah, sure.
So the Lakers news, I think it was Bresnahan. Mike Bresnahan tweeted that the Lakers are landing in Washington, D.C. for a noon meeting with Greg Monroe, then flying back to L.A. to meet with DeAndre. So that's going to be a very busy day for them. They also, shockingly to me, picked up their option on Robert Sacre just now, reported by Shams Charania of Real GM. But then the other bigger thing was
that doesn't shock me. What, I mean, that's only like an extra $500,000.
Yeah, it, well, it, and it,
I'm sure they can offload him too
if they had to. Yeah, and
things don't be fine on that. He's a, you know, third center for $1 million a year. Why not?
It's not devastating. But the other piece was that there were some murmurs going around. There are lots of them with the Lakers always, but the idea of them trying to get LaMarcus Aldridge and DeAndre Jordan, and there are some major logistical challenges with that, to put it briefly, to put it succinctly.
Yeah. I mean, that was the way it was reported by Woj, was rival executives believe that that's the Lakers' plan, is to get both of those guys. If they got rid of everything that isn't tied down and they were just left with Randall, the cap hold for D'Angelo Russell, the cap hold for Larry Nance, Kobe, and who am I forgetting? There's one other person. There's five people.
Jordan Clarkson.
Oh, Jordan Clarkson. Thank you. Yeah, who's on basically an $845,000 contract. They would never get rid of him. They only have $29 million in space. Both those guys have a max that's going to start at basically $19 million. So do the math there. Expecting those guys to take that much less to go play with the Lakers seems pretty unlikely, especially because that's not even a contender, even if they both go there, frankly. And, you know, with the number of young guys, I mean, their entire wing, small rotation with Bryant, Russell, and Clarkson wouldn't be able to guard anybody. So no way they have a good defense next year with that team. And, you know, that it's just, unless they were to do somehow a sign and trade with Portland, and that would require giving up significant assets, almost certainly Randall, Nick Young, you know, that's basically a negative asset for Portland, and, you know, maybe some future draft picks or something, and then, you know, some other flotsam salary, you might be able to get up to about $13 million, which is enough to trade for Aldridge, but Portland would have to agree to the deal, Aldridge would have to agree, DeAndre would have to agree. I mean, it's just, it's not completely impossible, but it's virtually impossible.
Yeah, and also, while those guys are very good, I think in a way that would shorten or lower the Lakers' ceiling long-term, because those guys are, well, DeAndre's on the younger side, but if you're thinking about the Lakers as trying to contend in the future, granted, I guess LaMarcus would be on such a short contract that he would kind of, maybe he'd be able to cycle him out. But if I would be thinking more for them about the more young guys like a Kevin Love, or in future years, you know, Durant or Russell Westbrook, guys like that, as opposed to guys that are going to be in their prime, or their prime right now, when the Lakers, regardless, they aren't going to be competing for a title next year, no matter what happens.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they are, apparently Love is going to meet with them, so that there is, it's not a foregone conclusion, I guess, that Love is going back to Cleveland. Real GM Shams Charania also reporting that Tobias Harris is to be targeted by the Pistons. I think he's a pretty good fit there next at the four next to Andre Drummond. Let's see, what else do we have here? The Knicks are meeting with Monroe first, a little earlier today in DC as well. That's been kind of presumed that he's going to go there, but I guess he's going to meet with the Lakers at least before he makes a decision. And you know, it would be interesting to me if the Knicks and Monroe agree, because if they do that, then, you know, they're supposed to have a meeting with Aldridge. They're basically punting right away and just going after Monroe, they would be hard pressed to fit in another max salary then, you know, because Carmelo is making so much in addition to, you know, maybe if they stretch Calderon, they might be able to get there to a max for Monroe and Aldridge, but for practical purposes, if they sign Monroe early, that takes them out of the running for basically any other of these max free agents.
I'm surprised we made it this far without talking about Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, that's true. Because we sort of forgot to get to him on the mock offseason podcast, or get back to him at least after I reached an impasse as the player agent negotiating with Dan Feldman. I just decreed that he was going to go back there with a compromise, a 5-year max deal with the 4th-year player option. The 4th-year player option is the compromise. The Bulls, as was widely predicted, did in fact extend him a maximum qualifying offer, meaning that he can sign for a minimum of 3 years elsewhere. So that's their leverage on him. His leverage on them is, I sign elsewhere for 3 years with a 4th-year player option. You'd like to have me for more years. Their leverage on him also is they can give him 7.5% raises instead of the 4.5% he would get elsewhere. So really, I think that's kind of the compromise, is that 5-year deal with a 4th-year, the 5th-year ETO is probably what it would be. So he can be a free agent again after 2019 is probably how it's going to work out. He's supposed to sleep on it and decide, but I really, that's where I see this ending up, frankly. You know, the Bulls compromised a little bit off of the full 5-year max, and, you know, I think Butler will have to compromise by going for another year, and that's where we're going to end up, is my prediction.
Yeah, and while I talked about that, just because of the way the rising cap is, that Butler could theoretically sign for his super low qualifying offer and then sign a 4-year deal next year and basically make that money back, you know, make back the difference.
$8 million more.
Yeah.
He did that right?
But yeah, but the reason that you would do that is if you really wanted to leave, you know, if you were in a really bad situation, because you're taking a huge risk for, on the long term, basically no money. You know, $8 million is a lot to us, but to a guy like that with his contract.
Well, maybe to you, Danny.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't go to Treviso every year, but the realistic thing there is that, yeah, he's doing that, and the carrot in that circumstance needs to be a lot better than leaving a team that seems like they're going to be awfully good. So, you know, maybe if you were in a team in a city that I will not name that might be going after Rajon Rondo, where you might think, we're not going to compete, you know, and so I'd rather take that risk so I can be somewhere where I'd be happy. With Chicago, I don't see that being an issue.
All right. No, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, it's not worth an extra $8 million over 5 years to potentially risk all of that money. You know, I mean, you'd much rather have $90 million for sure than $98 million. But, you know, what about the chances of a performance decline this year or a catastrophic injury or who knows what? I think when you consider all that and how it all makes sense that they're going to, I think, agree on that 5-year deal, 4th-year, or ETO after the 4th-year.
So another quick piece, the Wizards are optimistic about Paul Pierce and the Clippers are not, which is not surprising because the Wizards can offer more money than the Clippers can. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that while Paul would have a very kind of compelling role on the Clippers, assuming DeAndre Jordan comes back, which is an interesting assumption.
Yeah, you're not going to – nobody's going to sign in L.A. until that gets worked out. Right?
Wesley Johnson might. Yeah, Wes and Gerald Greenwood, but other than that. And then the other pieces that – some other things that are important but that we haven't talked about in the last couple of days. Do you want to pronounce the Minnesota draft pick's name?
So this is the EuroLeague MVP.
Yeah.
Nemanja Bjelica, I believe is how you pronounce it. He was a stalwart on the Serbian silver medal team at the World Cup last year. Kind of combo forward type, plays a 4 in Europe, might play a little 3 here, but kind of do a little bit of everything type of guy. You know, pretty average athlete by NBA standards, but good passer, good shooter, can get to the basket, driving to the rim off of 1 foot. Smart player. 27 years old. Flip Saunders said that he, on the NBA Lockdown podcast on Sunday, that he expects him to be over. I would look for him, you know, to get something maybe in the four to six million range over 3 years. It doesn't seem like the details have exactly been worked out yet, but that seems to be kind of the going right now for some of these best players in Europe. That's what Nikola Mirotic got, you know, when he was with the Bulls. Yule is being talked about in that range. And the other thing I would say, too, is starting in 2016, with all the cap space that teams are going to have, I would look for, a lot of kind of Euro-stashed guys to come over, because they will be, you know, who are second-round picks, because they'll have exclusive negotiating rights. Teams will be able to get them for cheaper than they could just a normal free agent. But then even guys who are over in Europe and are kind of, you know, are free agents and are playing, you know, in the EuroLeague or whatever right now, I expect more of them to come over next year too, because the economics start to make sense. In the old days, when you just basically had cap exceptions, it didn't make sense to spend the full mid-level on a guy like that coming from Europe who's unproven, who might be like a backup point guard or something like that, or a backup center. And those guys, you know, are making $2 million a year or so. So there's not, and there wasn't really a mechanism, unless you had cap space, to pay that someone like that like $3 million, $3.5 million, you know, more than they could make in Europe, because every team was capped out and there just weren't the exceptions to do that. And free agent money was being spent on more established NBA guys. Now, you know, spending that type of money to get a backup, $3.5 million, $4 million, something like that, when every team in 2016 is going to have cap space, I would expect to see a lot more of those guys come over for deals that their European teams aren't necessarily going to be able to compete with, because I don't think their revenue is rising nearly as quickly as NBA teams will be.
It's a really important point, and it also, to me, would be a great way to improve the quality of play in the league, because you're adding guys without subtracting anything, because the American players are still going to be, you know, just as interested as they are, and so you deepen the talent pool in a way that would be wonderful for the league.
No, that would be great. I mean, especially since a lot of those guys are really smart players, good passers, guys who are skilled and can shoot, you know, and I really enjoy the European style of ball movement. I think seeing more of that would be nice to see. So anyway, all right, I think that will just about do it for today. I'm sure there's a ton of stuff that's going to come in on Twitter over the next 24 hours, but we'll be back to go over all of that tomorrow night. Thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter, Nate Duncan NBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. We've actually been getting a lot of really nice rankings on iTunes. If you have a chance, listen to that mock off-season podcast that we did with Feldman. That was probably my favorite podcast that we've ever done, and it'll hopefully be slightly relevant for another 24 hours or so before everybody starts signing and proves it completely incorrect. But thanks again so much for listening. I hope we're getting some new listeners during this free agent period, and we'll talk to y'all tomorrow night. Thanks.